from beginning to the end. Our emotion. My name is Patrick. I'm a lovable guy and I'm a person in recovery. And thank you for that last part. I love this new language that's being used here about our addiction. This is going to be very, very emotional for me. And like, I'm so okay with that today. Like, as buddy here, when I feel something that I need to feel, it's a good thing. And I feel nothing but Jesus Christ. Just unbelievable joy and gratitude to be sitting here with you today. I mean that from the bottom of my heart. It's, I was thinking, I'm in the shower, and if you heard the talk that was in the shower, Orlando would be on the phone going, Patrick, we heard about the Tusnua thing. So we think next September you should be happening for us. I don't think that's the one that's going to happen, but that's okay too. I hope that this is my love letter to you and to this program that we've embraced here. That's what I want this to be. And about the people in my life that have meant so much. That's all it is. It's nothing to do with me. It's everything to do with you and this program. Everything, right? It's a celebration of that. I tried a million different things from therapy to, treatment centers and whatever to get sober, and I just couldn't. And then I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, and I did. Thank you. It worked. Now there were some bumps along the road, as my bosom buddy, lifelong pal, as you can see our title here, alluded to. So anyway, I'll tell you a little bit of the background just to get myself going, get over the kind of nervousness I feel. I grew up in an alcoholic home, and it was not a good beginning. It was, my father was an alcoholic. He was, born just outside of Dublin, Ireland. So it's always appropriate. I always feel more emotional at Tusnua because, the Irish roots and now having been there and met people like our friend Tom, who just played that beautiful music, and of course my dear Mark, who's, oh God, I gotta share this with you. So I have these many Joes in my life. Actually, I'll just go there right now because I feel like it. That's what I mean. It's gonna be all over the place, and that's perfectly okay. So there was a point where I sponsored a couple of guys named Joe. I had this Joe. My sponsor was this fellow, Joe, another Joe C. Joe Cushing was his name. He was an old guy that impacted my life so tremendously. I could spend this talk just talking about that role. And different people feel different ways about sponsorship. I am huge on it. Not because, like, Joe didn't tell me what to do in any way, shape, or form. He told me what his experience was. Always told me that. And I took from that experience, right? This was a guy who got sober in 1945, so he might have had something to say, but so I had this thought the other day. This dear friend of ours, Mark, who's somewhere on the screen here, he's probably hosting this thing behind the scenes, if I'm not mistaken. But I love that kid like the little brother I never had, right? So I'm thinking the other day I met Joe when I was 28, Joe Cushing, but really started to get to know him when I was 30 or 31, just like Marcus, right? And I thought of him as this old, wise character, but thankfully I was open-minded enough to be listening, even though the fact he was a real old guy. Joe Cushing was 69 when I started that relationship. I'm 67. So I thought, holy shit, I've become Joe Cushing in age. How did this happen? How? Right? But it warmed me to think, that someone like my friend Mark, who listens to the generation that came before, and I appreciate that, and I appreciate that friendship, right? So anyway, let's get back to a bit of the story. So we it's almost like I don't want to dig too deep in there, because the childhood was, it was definitely traumatic and dark, My father was a fun-loving Irishman who loved to sing and dance, but a very irresponsible guy, right? So we moved and moved and moved. I went to 19 different schools along the way. So you're always the new kid. You got to learn to fight and, just not great. And why did we move? Because we didn't pay the rent. So, coming from that kind of poverty, it affects a child. It's that simple, So I had shame issues before, for as early as I can remember, Why do I introduce myself as a lovable guy? Because it's very important to me. That was a piece that was missing for a long, long time in my life and my recovery, was I just wasn't okay with me. And when I look back on that, it's a sad thing for a child to experience that, right? And now I know it's okay to look back and to go, hey, yeah, right? Because when I refuse to look back, that's when I had difficulty, So we'll get to that in a couple of minutes here. But so this moving and not knowing at first what was causing it was difficult. Then when I realized it was alcohol, the problem was my dad and I was his little buddy. So I just loved him dearly. It was that simple. At times, of course, it was the deck Jekyll and Hyde thing that I later would perform myself, right? Where the guy who I saw at home in the morning and the guy who came home that night were two very, very different people who it was harder to talk to, right? And my mother was the oldest of 11 French Canadian from Northern Ontario, and I don't think she ever really was given any love whatsoever. I really don't, because she just was a very, very cold individual, just didn't know how to show love. So I've got this guy, coming home howling, and we're moving, and shit's going on, and I can't go to my mother because she's incapable of offering me what a little boy needs, And that became an issue for a long, long time, to the point, like, I knew that if, even in recovery, that if she died or when she died, that I probably wouldn't shed a tear because we didn't have that bond, And recovery and unearthing the things that I needed to look at in that relationship gave me not only the ability to grieve the loss of my mother when it inevitably happened, but I had 10 or 15 good years with her where we had a different relationship. And that's magnificent, And just another part of recovery. I must say this, like looking at that balance between sort of owning what I needed to own as an alcoholic myself, and then sort of a stage two recovery of looking at the places I got hurt. See, for a long time, I didn't know it was okay to look there. And I found myself in a place where if I didn't look at it, it would have cost me my life. So we'll get to that again. So anyway, the wild thing with this in my life is I distinctly remember going to my mother once I realized alcohol was the problem and telling her, Mom, never, ever, ever will I touch that. I'm probably, I don't know, 9 or 10 when that happens. By the time I'm 13 and someone offers me a drink, I don't even hesitate. I'm on it, So some part of me knew that whatever I needed to happen inside to feel a bit differently than I did was going to happen without ever having touched alcohol in my life, And that was it. Life changed in that moment. I just have to wipe my little snotty nose here from, being an emotional, pardon me. And again, a sadness when I look back at that and think of a 13-year-old boy that, I was a bright kid. I mean, I was playing euchre at 4. My father, the things he did that were right. I mean, he would bedtime stories from my father when I was 4 was The Merchant of Venice. Pound of flesh, Antonio, and I loved it, right? Pied Piper of Hamelin, where all the kids get dragged into the mountain and, pay the bills. But anyway, so that I always appreciated that. I wouldn't have gotten through life without a love of reading that he gave me, So anyway, at that time when alcohol comes into the equation and then right behind it, drugs, I worry only about that. School doesn't matter. Family doesn't matter. How do I get a bag of pot and a bottle of wine for the school dance that's coming up on Saturday? That's what matters, right? And it stayed that way. I'm 14, I'm 15. We moved to Florida, right? And as this polite little Canadian boy, or at least I saw myself as that, I found Americans to be a little more assertive. No offense, many of you are Americans, and many of you are my friends, even my old pals here in Washington. What's to be afraid of, right? See, I got my terror in Maryland thing going on today, don't I? Huh? Yes, sirree. I'm so happy you're here. Where was I?
You were in Florida.
Oh, I was. I was in Florida living there. Oh, so we tell the story, right, Joe? It's time for that story. I had a buddy, like we're drinking, and that's what matters, and doping, and I'm loving it, but I'm a bit afraid of the world and this new culture and all of these things. And anyway, my buddy and I, my friend worked. I look down the screen here, and I actually see, I won't identify her by name, but my niece is in the room today, and that's a special thing for me, for sure. So her father had a custom body shop in Florida that after school I would go and help him, sand the cars that he was going to paint. And my friend worked for him, right? So that friend, he and I are driving around with these two older guys, probably from the shop. They're probably 20 years old. We're 15, and we're drinking our Budweisers and just enjoying St. Petersburg. And the guy in the front seat, he reaches in his pocket, and he's got a couple of pills in his hand, and he goes back like this, and just like Joe and I are sitting, and we just grab them, gone, right? And the guy shakes his head like this, and he says, "You two are something else." He goes, "Those were pool tip cues that I just gave you, right?" And no part of me goes, "Holy fuck, you'll take anything if you think you're gonna get high." No, I just thought, so I won't be getting a buzz. But obviously, I'm telling you the story, so it planted some little seed in there, and it just stayed like that. I'm 17. My girlfriend calls me an alcoholic. I think I need a new girlfriend. That's all that matters there. But again, there's a seed, right? And nothing changed. My father died a horrific death. We came back to Canada, and it took, 3 or 4 years to get him. And I'll just touch on that I, after that happened, I was fucked up. If I'd been bad before that, it just everything changed in that moment that he was gone. I felt like I'd been a bad son to him, and left him in his time of need, and just all of these things that I carried on myself, and it's so weird. I have a magnificent partner upstairs right this minute who I've been with since the day we buried my father. So, that's how this thing is. Like, I'm one of five children, and each of us either had addiction problems or married adult children of alcoholics. What are the odds? 5 out of 5. What we live with, we learn. What we learn, we practice. What we practice, we become. Those are Ernie Larson's words, but they are so poignant to the discussion on alcoholism as it relates to the family. My wife was a straight A student, studying to be a law clerk, and locally here, she was from a small town in Ontario, and she meets Buddy, who's out of his mind with grief, alcoholism, and drug addiction, and thinks she's met the man of her dreams. How does this make any sense? I mean, I'm so glad that I've become a different person in the relationship, and have been for a long, long time, and we have a wonderful partnership. I think she'd come down and tell you the same, but the road, when I look back at that and go, holy shit, like I don't know how she put up with it, right? Because as I say, it just got worse and worse and worse. And I'm 28, have a bad car accident. That was that moment of clarity that we talk about here. I drove one of those little tin can Honda Civics when they just folded up like an accordion if they touched anything, and I had to go identify it at the wrecking yard, because I had, in a snowstorm, I'd run into the back of a big cube van. And just looking at this car and thinking, how did I get out of this? I mean, I had a broken collarbone and a concussion and some broken ribs, but otherwise, it was a pretty nasty accident. And that gave me the wake up call. I'd been to AA, my employer, when I was 23 or 4 years old, 1979 or 80, sent me to day treatment. All I could, I couldn't wait to get out of the place. I started going to AA, and I'm listening to a buddy who's he's got 6 impaired driving charges. He's had 3 wives. He's and I'm like, what am I doing here? Like I'm 24 years old. Like what's the point? Too young. That's what's happening here. Bye. I'd go out, get drunk, come home, and talk about how wonderful Alcoholics Anonymous was. So then at 28, and here's a little thing I always like to say, because it was always so easy for me to talk about this Joe Cushing because of what he meant in my life. But the reality of what happened, something I could never give mom, was she was at this, we have here in Ontario something called the Ontario Regional Conference. Some of you may or may not have been to it. It's quite a large, 5, 6, 7,000 people, or at least it used to be, each year, right? And at the Royal York Hotel, it was in many, many times. So my mother was down there having tea and crumpets or whatever with other old ladies, and these people were speaking about nutrition. And then this guy comes out on the stage with these old ladies. This has nothing to do with AA. He's giving a talk on nutrition and alcoholism. So, and I know this because my mother got me the tape to listen to. But the guy comes out in front of the old ladies and he's like, "My name's Joe and I'm an alcoholic. That's first and foremost, you need to know that." And I'm thinking, and you're telling a bunch of old ladies at the Royal York Hotel, like, holy shit, buddy, give yourself a shake, right? But I had still admired it. I listened to the tape. It meant nothing to me because he's talking about, stage 3 or 4 recovery with nutrition. And back then, this is, 1985. So what happened was my mother walked up after that and she said, "Can you help my son?" And Joe gave her his card, said he was going to Florida, but anytime after that, I could call. And this just happened right at this accident. And I started calling him every day anyway. I mean, there was no cell phones back there, so it just was his home phone, in the hope maybe he was home a day early after I heard the guy, the alcoholic, talking to the old women. And then I got him the next week, and that started the relationship. And as I say, it grew and grew. And that guy just had a way about him that that I was able to absorb things that I use to this day in life, And he loved me unconditionally, like this guy here does, right? That's Joe. The name Joe will always mean a lot to me. As I started to say, I had 2 guys I sponsored, had this character as a best friend. I had Joe Cushing as a sponsor. But the guy who cut my hair, his name was Joe. I had an Uncle Joe. My middle name's Joseph. It got to a point, like somebody like walk into a meeting or something, they go, "Oh, hey, I'm Patrick. I'm Joe." Like, "Go sit down beside me, buddy. We're probably going to be buddies." Right? That's how much that name affected my life, right? So if your name's Joe and you're listening today, we'll have to have a chat afterwards, or any other name. So that began the journey, right? And it's weird because everything I touched turned to gold in sobriety, right? Joni is my partner's name, and we were able to get married, and I had some business successes that were the things I couldn't have imagined because I'd just been this irresponsible character my whole life. So suddenly I'm sober and I'm doing things differently, and things are happening. Good things are happening, right? And then there comes a point where I get legitimately sick. And here's the weird thing. I had stopped talking about this cough syrup situation back in the mid 90s or the late 90s. I remember saying to Joe, like, "Why am I talking about this again in secular?" Because it's important to talk about. That's why. It's important to me, right? Because it opened this other part of the journey that was, right? So anyway, I got all these things going on. I got this new marriage. I got these 2 businesses, and I'm taking over-the-counter fucking cough syrup because that's what my self-image says I need to do. It didn't have alcohol or codeine in it, so that sort of cunning, baffling, powerful phrase that we're all familiar with, or some of us are familiar with, that's what that was. Because I'm like, I've got more money than I ever had. I kind of like cocaine. Why have I not gone and taken cocaine? At the very least, alcohol, my buddy, alcohol. Why am I not drinking again? Never touched a drop. Never touched a street drug. But this little bottle, it took me like over 3 years of battling through it, and it was going to take my life. It was very difficult for people, my family. I mean, of course, the shame that I felt as a result, because it's not like there's more acceptance in drinking a Labatt's Blue than there is fucking cough syrup. It's more social acceptance to one than the other, that's for sure, right? And this stuff, there was no pleasure in it. It just, as I say, I didn't know what was going on at the time, but my own self-worth was so low. Take the responsibility of a new marriage and a couple of businesses and add that to the way I felt about myself at my deepest point, how sad is that? I can't live in addiction and I can't live in that solution at the time, right? And that's what opened the door. Joe Cushing knew some AA members that had a ranch in Arizona. I ended up going there for 6 months because I would get 6 months away from this and back at it, right? And I say it's important because, like I said, I'm going, this must be something different because why aren't I doing drugs I enjoy doing? This shit just makes it. All I did was walk around in pure sweat. And like I say, I look back on it and poor Joan and my family and my friends, even my AA friends had trouble with it, right? Because I didn't stop going to meetings. I just battled through to the best of my ability, right? But two guys, old Joe, and believe it or not, this was young Joe, this guy right here,
Those were
right?
the days, my friend.
So that pivotal night that he talks about when I dropped him off because he had said, "Why don't we go for a game of pool?" Because we both loved the game. Didn't need any of the tips or anything, just actually played pool. And he just told me that his love for me was unconditional. And then he got out of the van and he went in his house. And I just sat there sobbing, right? And I held on to that for all I was worth. Joe Cushing went to Arizona, met these people, came back and said, "Patrick, I believe there's a place for you." So 32 years ago tonight, I stood in the Arizona fucking night looking at the skies going, "I wonder if there's something here for me." This was 3.5 years. It was going to take my life, just like cocaine was, just like alcohol, anything. It was going to take my life. And I just didn't know. I had tried everything. The problem was, I thought that I already knew the solution from Alcoholics Anonymous. Did I miss something in that fifth step? Is there something that, I did, I did things the best I could that, in a way I'd never done in my life. I was honest, but I needed to be, and again, keep an open mind. This is what the journey looked like for me. Many, never pick up again, never have a difficulty. But if you have had, hear what I'm saying. It was about how I felt about myself, and Arizona allowed me an opportunity to purge the stories I told myself that were foul, that were going to take my life. It allowed that. I got into looking at where I'd come from, sort of balancing the relationship with my father of his alcoholism and mine, and looking at the guilt, right, and letting it go. And I would get in touch with grief to a point I would vomit after sessions there, just vomit the hurt. Literally. And I came home from that experience and things were different. I had a different sort of open mind about things, and I became very interested in adult child issues, and I actually went to school for that specific thing, working with adult children of alcoholics. And I've never spoke about that when I was practicing because I don't believe that my career and AA are it's irrelevant, right? And it wasn't, it's always funny because I, later went to university at 44, and I didn't know these things were possible, by the way. I never finished high school, and so to take on higher learning was a gift of of sobriety. But anyway, so let's just, I want to, I'm going to jump ahead more because I feel like it. So now I'm doing that, and I'm attending again. I'm going to, be flat out and tell you, like, traditional AA certainly saved my life, plain and simply, right? And I'm never going to deny that. And the gifts I took from that program and its people, again, when I say, this is my love letter to you, I mean all of you. I mean the people who are here today and the people who are over there, in meetings, right? But it got to a point I just felt like things were going backwards and I was getting in touch with new readings and new things, And of course the adult child thing and how that had changed my life. And I started a men's group, just a men's feelings and issues group, just so we could talk about shit. We had guys from every fellowship on the planet, like, a small group of us, and we met for 10 years, and it was just men sharing emotionally, just purging stuff and talking about childhood sexual abuse and talking about, mothers, fathers, whatever we needed to talk about, right? And poverty and shame, anyway, it's funny, I was speaking there a week or two ago, and I was talking about the meaningfulness of looking at the adult child as it relates to the two pieces of recovery that are my life. Well, many pieces, but the two primaries that I started with. And this guy looks feeding back to me at the end of it, and he's like, "Oh yeah, I remember where people were into John Bradshaw and they brought teddy bears to meetings." But that didn't last long. And I thought, seriously? Like, looking at childhood trauma, you equate to bringing a teddy bear to it. Kind of upset me, to be honest with you. But I let it go. I'm back here amongst, you all. I couldn't help myself. Anyway, so let's just, we're gonna wrap it up soon because I'm rambling. But I there's oh yeah. There, God damn, I almost forgot. So I stopped going to meetings. It was the weirdest thing. I would bring like guys I sponsored to Beyond Belief Toronto, the physical meeting, right? And then they'd go away and start secular meetings. And I'd go back to my traditional meeting with this sense of loyalty that was kind of fucked up, it doesn't mean I don't judge any of that. Like I said, it was life-saving, right? But something had changed for me. But again, I seemed to have trouble moving forward. I wasn't going to secular either, right? So it wasn't until Zoom hit that Professor Long here it says to me, "Why don't you give this a shot? It might be good for you." I'm like, "Oh, fuck, okay." So we went to the Queen Street Mental Health Tuesday meeting in Toronto, and I loved it from day one. And a few of you were there. And then a young Mark was there and said, "We're starting a secular meeting in Ireland. We started last week and we could use some support." And so Joe and I came. We spent a couple of years there, started to meet that Tara and Marilyn were there. I don't know if Dawn's here today, but but there was lots of you anyway. And that was so cool because, like, my father being from there, and I had been to Ireland by that point and was able to go where my father was born, to the house he was born, just outside of Dublin. And what an experience, right? But then, like, getting in touch and listening, this is the other part I just want to get into here. Listening, Xander and I were talking about this last night. Xander and I met for the first time physically last night, and it was exciting to finally, give a hug to this person, right? So I was talking, like, about the new discourse on addiction that I'm hearing in these rooms, right? And like this, like I said, I don't have any problem identifying as an alcoholic and using that, but I like the terminology. I like this people talking about, like, our one friend there who identifies a part of me as an alcoholic or a person in recovery or alcohol use disorder. All of these new terms I think are very, very healthy. I put away the shame, guilt, blame, fault words long time ago, right? But these new ones and this new discourse that you got going on in these rooms, it's so exciting. It has rejuvenated me. I can't tell you. Then add the element of things like this. I have to give a shout out to this Tusnua thing that you were doing every year. I usually just pop in for an hour or two, but I always make an appearance because it's important to me, and just want to honor those of you who put 25 hours of meeting on every year. And then people like Xander starting what we just saw was a neurodivergence meeting. This is some cool shit. Seriously, like the openness of people's talks, and I could go on and on about it because I'm learning. I feel like I'm a student again of this thing, you know? But God, I look forward to this Orlando thing coming up. I probably won't be speaking there, obviously, but he probably will. And you know, I bet you there's a few of you in the room that will, right? That Mike G is probably right in there. I'll bet. I love that cat's talk. Now there's a fucking AA talk. That cat. Whoa. Oh my God. So anyway, what a pleasure. I just looking at the screen right now, and I see it. Got to sit and have a meal with our friend Tom from Cork, and I just loved hearing you play piano. Play piano. Play some beautiful jazz guitar earlier today, and you know, going over after on my second trip to Ireland, and you know, meeting Eugene and Don from Sligo, one of my favorite guys, who, you know, him and his wife got to sit down and have a little time with, and Damien in Dublin. It just went on and on. But for me, again, my dear Mark, to go down to Mullinavat, Ireland, and spend a couple of days with him, it was a special thing for me. So I really want to say thank you, and I love you. And when I say thank you, I mean you're giving me this new piss and vinegar about recovery. And thank you. That's it. Thank you. I love you. The end.